So you are probably, most of you all aware, we just now are attending to a potential flood in the bathroom, and maybe you weren't and were just wondering what was going on and why we hadn't showed up. Don't worry, we were just dealing with a minor maintenance issue, and hopefully we'll have some water again before the end of the day, certainly by the end of the retreat, I imagine, but for now the water's turned off and the bathrooms are probably best not used. Sometimes the things we rely on turn out not to be as reliable as we might have imagined. And something rather useful and pleasant, such as water, can turn out in its abundance and unstoppable arrival to be something of a problem. And it's not often, perhaps in this country, you would imagine that discovering water would be a problem, but on this particular occasion it seemed like it might be. And life is kind of like that, isn't it? Things that we were relying upon sometimes turn out not to be able to carry what we ask of them or hope to rely on them for. Life itself is something which moves, which changes, which is constantly in a process of transforming. And it's this that I'd like to speak about: the truth and the experience of change. And sometimes I give the title for this theme as what it means to live in rental accommodation. You know the word rental? As in you don't own it, you just... What's the word? If you are... Settled? Settled? You got it. So it doesn't matter if you don't, actually. But anyway... Okay, living in rental accommodation. The reality of our life is that things change. The recognition of this is regarded as one of the core and fundamental understandings that Dharma teachings invite us to explore and to recognize. The Buddha spoke of this truth of change, as being the elephant's footprint, in that the elephant's footprint encompasses the footprints of every other creature. It's big. And the truth of change encompasses all the truths of the world. All that arises is subject to passing. All that comes into being comes to an end. This truth, this reality, change and impermanence, dominates the world of things. And this human existence, this, as we've said, rather remarkable and miraculous existence, is subject to that law, to that truth. We are, as human beings, living in rental accommodation. Is that phrase again? I shouldn't even try, really. We're living in rental accommodation. It's like it's borrowed. Some years ago, after returning from some time living in America, my wife Catherine and I, returning to England, we were very kindly invited by some a large sort of trust to come and live at this house and provide some minor services. But really, they gave us free accommodation, and partly because they knew we were involved in Dharma work and really had very little resources. And it was a very nice place to live, and for about a year and a half, we lived there, and then at some point, they invited us to leave. they had some need for that room now. And we lived in various places. And about a year or two later, some friends of ours were buying a house, and they said, come and live with us there. We have this big house, we'd like to live together. And it was very nice and interesting. And about a year and a half later, they said, you know, we'd like you to leave now. Not right away, but, you know. And it's kind of an interesting experience both times. It's how nice. You know, they gave us reduced rent too. They were, you know, also Dharma friends. And this experience of being invited in, and then at some point invited out. It wasn't anything we did. They told us. But it's much the same for us all, isn't it? We're kind of invited in. We didn't necessarily choose to come here in any conscious way that we remember. But this body and this mind that thinks, this is a thing that is temporary, that does not last forever. And we have in this particular accommodation an unpredictable landlord. You know landlord? The one who owns the accommodation? Unpredictable. One day we'll say, time to leave. It's really worth reflecting upon this. Because when we reflect upon this, it starts to put into perspective the many things that we think are so important that perhaps are not as important as we imagine, that perhaps are not worth getting so concerned or upset about. And the Buddha suggested, invited and encouraged his students to reflect on this. To reflect that all that is mine, beloved and pleasing to me, I will be parted from. All that is mine, beloved and pleasing to me, I will be parted from. To really let this in. It takes some courage, some honesty, some sobriety to really let this in. Do we recognize that we, each and every one of us here in this room, will not be here in 100 years? Actually, there's a few possibilities, I have to say. I don't know if they're hearing this, but there's a small possibility for a few of us, but not for most of us. Certainly 150 years and for sure, none of us are here. You know, we normally only really let this in if it's immediate, if it's close to us, if we see it or hear it or know it's happening to someone close around us, or see it coming to ourselves. But if we let it in without having to wait until it's that close, it'll be perhaps one of the most precious and powerful things we ever do, if we let this truth in. The Buddha's search, his seeking for enlightenment, for awakening, for wisdom, was born of his own recognition that he was subject to death. And he said, why should I, who am subject to aging, sickness and death, spend my life chasing after other things which are also subject to this? Does it not make more sense that I, who am subject to aging, sickness and death, should seek for that which is not subject to aging, sickness and death? It's there for us, isn't it? It's like we can see it. We see how things come and go. At one level, we know all about it. And yet, at another level, we are blind to it. We are blind to this truth most of the time. I had a stark reminder of this some years ago. I was just about to go and teach a retreat in, at Gaia House, the retreat centre we have in southwest England, which I live near and I'm quite involved with. And it was a very hot day that day when I was getting ready to pack to go to the retreat in the evening. I live about 8 miles away, 12 kilometres. And it was a very hot day, which is very rare in England. You must perhaps have heard about the English weather. Mostly it's, you know, well, one way someone once described it, someone said, how can you tell the weather around here? He said, well, you look at that mountain, you see? If you can see that mountain, it's going to rain. If you can't see that mountain, it's raining. It's your two main possibilities. But here we were, I was in England. It was a really hot day. And I was worried because I didn't actually have enough clothes that were tidy enough to wear to teach a retreat. Because it just never gets hot enough to need sort of really lightweight clothes like you probably have many of. But in England you have very few. Well, I had very few. And I was really worried and concerned and anxious. How am I going to do this? I have a whole week. It's really hot now. And eventually I found such things as I could and took them along. And about a day later, of course, the weather changed. It was cold. It was wet. And I went up to my room and I found I haven't even brought a sweater. And I'm thinking, what was I thinking? What happened to me? It happens to us all. You can laugh. But it happens to us all. I was believing that it was going to be sunny all week and I was really worried, how will I cope? It's going to be too hot. Have you noticed yourself getting worried about how you will cope with something because it's going to be here forever and you don't think you can cope with that? Only to find that it's not here forever and all your time worrying about how to cope with it was wasted? We don't see the truth of change. And most of the way we relate to experience, we don't see it clearly enough. And this is a major delusion. This is a major source of suffering. Because it means we're not in touch with what's true. Suffering comes out of being blind to what is true and not being able to live in accordance with truth. This is why we seek to see more deeply, more fully. I mean, you must have noticed it's quite possible in your meditation, if it's going well, how you start thinking, oh wow, this is great. Oh yeah, I think I'm really into this meditation. I think I'll do some more. We start imagining long retreats, or maybe we think I'll become a monk or a nun. And we've got this whole future mapped out on the basis that right now it's actually going quite well. Of course, at some point, we notice that we're thinking about rather than actually practicing. And then we think, oh, blown it again, lost it completely. I'm hopeless. I can't do this. This is miserable. We realize my body's aching. I'm feeling sort of annoyed with myself. And it's like, this is horrible. This is hopeless. I'm not staying here. I'm getting out. I'm going home this moment. Again, thinking that it's because that condition is going to stay. I can't stand this. I'm out of here. Then maybe, hopefully, we notice that. We think, oh, look at that. It was great one moment. Miserable the next. And right now, it's just kind of curious. Puzzling. Possibly even a little humorous. To see our mind. But it's easy to relate as if things will be forever. To not really understand that they are not. They never are, never will be. There is no condition you're experiencing now that will continue the way it is. At some point, well, for some time it might, but at some point it will change. But how is it then that we don't see this? It's so obvious. If I asked any of you, you'd tell me, of course things change. If you asked any child, do things always stay the same? They'd say, of course things don't stay always the same. But how do we not see this in a way that makes a difference for us? is because we're not really present. Most of the time, we're in the past and the future. And if you could imagine how this... I don't know if you have any long straight roads in this country, but probably somewhere there's a road that's long enough for you to have maybe experienced this. Or otherwise, you can imagine you're driving along on a road and you just look straight out. It's a long straight piece of road. You look at what you see at the far end of the road. It doesn't really change too much out there at the far end. You're just going towards it just like this. Now, if you're driving, it's probably not so good to do this piece, but you know, if you look out the back window and it's a long straight, you look out the back, what you see out the back window is pretty much the same. It's just a picture of something a far distance away. It's not really changing too much. Now, if you look out the side window, driving along in a car, not if you're driving, passenger. If you're driving, keep looking forwards. If you're a passenger, you look out the side window, what do you see? It's going fast so quickly, it's a blur, and you can't even pick out the individual things. Just... When we live with our mind focused in the future, we're creating an image, it's a picture. It's not a something that's real, it's an idea. And therefore we make it into a fixed idea that looks like it's solid and it's this thing that's going to continue to be. Or when we look into the past, it's not the past. It's our memory, which is an idea, a concept, and a construct from something that happened that's fixed, that says, it was like this. Have you ever talked to three or four people who were there when something happened? And it seems like three or four different things happened, but they were there at the same thing happening. It's like our memory isn't what happened, it's just a picture of it. And because we spend most of our life living in the fixation on the future, it's a picture, and the past, it's a picture, that doesn't change, we start believing that things are fixed and don't change. When, as we practice, which is what we're doing here, being present and noticing what's happening now, and again here and now, what we start to notice is that things are changing very, very quickly. In fact, we have to slow down to be able to see them. It's like if you want to see what's happening outside your car window on the side of the road, if you want to pick out what's going, you have to slow the car right down or you can't do it. Just... And so there's this attention that we're giving to the present moment in order to see what's really happening. And one primary and significant element of this is the fact that everything that we see, everything that we see, every experience that arises, not just visual seeing, arises and passes, arises and passes. And in the midst of this, we might find ourselves appropriately asking or considering, well, everything I see, these thoughts, these feelings, even sensations that seem maybe sometimes difficult or painful, if you look at them carefully, you'll see they're moving around. They're changing. They arise. They pass. They constantly shift. It's only when we react to them, and then we're not relating to them at all as the experience. We're relating to the idea. It's pain. It's pain. It's still pain. Or it's hot. It's hot. It's still hot. Or it's stuffy. It's stuffy. It's still stuffy. We're relating to an idea, not to the experience. The experience keeps changing. And you'll notice this if you actually can stay with the experience. But when we don't stay with the experience, we get into the reaction to it. And we're reacting again to something we've created in our mind. What we also notice is that all these things that are going on, if we look at them and we see they're changing, it's like this body, this mind, everything I hear, see, smell, taste. There's nowhere in that that we can find something solid to hold on to say this is who I am, or this is what's happening. The only thing we can say is that this that I'm encountering is moving, is changing, is shifting. And the Buddha really suggested that we consider whether it makes sense to believe that this thing that is moving and shifting and changing is who we are. Because this body, there's nothing here that was here when we were born. There's actually virtually nothing that was here 10 years ago. This whole thing is different. It looks kind of similar, sort of wearing out slowly, but you know, we tend to think it's the same thing. As far as our mind and our thoughts, they just disappear so quickly. And yet somehow we believe that in this is me. And so far as we believe this, we suffer. We struggle. We fight. And we try desperately to find something that's solid. We try desperately to make something fixed. Make something secure that we could rely on. And the effort of doing that is exhausting. Like trying to stop a river. And frustrating. Like trying to catch the wind. You can't do it. You can't do it. And yet, we persist, it seems, in trying to do it. That the vibration of impermanence, of change, and the fact that it means we cannot control life, this is really scary to us. This is really threatening. Often, when we're trying to make things the way we want them, it's not actually because they're so bad. The way they are. It's because we can't deal with the implications of being out of control, of it not being the way I want it, of the fact that the conditions aren't comfortable. We can't deal with that. So we've got to make some effort, some attempt to feel like we're in charge, we're empowered. And so we decide we're going to open the door that was closed. We're going to close the door that was opened. We're going to get up and run around, despite having been quite clearly suggested that maybe we could not have to do that. That if we all tried to do it, we'd spend all day trying to adjust the space. But it's like, I can't not do it. I'm compelled. I have to. Maybe we think I'm taking care of myself. Maybe we think I'm taking care of somebody else. But it's like trying to impose a sense of control on something that's uncontrollable. Trying to give ourselves, create ourselves a place we can stop and rest in the midst of something that's moving and changing. Always. Always changing. And the effect of this is that we become tight and rigid, and it's like inside it becomes so hard. And the condition in there is really unpleasant. Whenever you have an idea of must be like this, it's like we're trying to make something we can rely on. But in the end it doesn't work. And it just adds to the suffering. As Leela was speaking previously about the arrow and the second arrow. It's like our attempt to control the uncontrollable. Our attempt to fix that which is moving. We really need to ask ourselves, if we want to continue investing in this way, we hope that circumstances, houses, people, jobs, relationships, bodies, possessions, we hope that these things will provide us the security that we wish for. But they don't. It's not in their nature to be able to. They just do not provide this. And that doesn't mean we can't make use of things, enjoy them. Seek out that which we wish for. But we need to understand its nature. It's like children on the beach making sandcastles. If the children there on the beach making sandcastles in the tidal zone, you see, sometimes some children, they make sandcastles, it's beautiful, it's ornate, it's decorated. and then the waves come in. Now sometimes the children, they laugh and here comes the wave, there goes the sandcastle. Sometimes, you see, they get really upset. It's getting washed away. It hurts them. They're unable to let it go. Sometimes we're like that, building sandcastles in the path of the waves of life and the winds of change. And this is unsettling. This is unsettling for us, but in a healthy way, if we learn to actually meet that condition of being unsettled, because it actually has a lot of power in it. It has a lot of truth in it. But really, we have to give up our idea and our dream, our fantasy of security, of the hope that at some point we'll finally get all the conditions together in such a way that we can somehow just relax and it'll all be fine and happily ever after. We have to give that idea up. Helen Keller, who was a remarkable woman who lived her life deaf and blind, she once said, "Security is mostly a superstition. It does not exist in nature, and nor do the children of man experience it. In the long run, avoiding danger is no safer than outright exposure. Life is either a glorious adventure, or it is nothing." Remarkable words. So what do they mean for us? What they say to us is, embrace the truth of change. Don't look to fight it, but understand it deeply. Because, of course, change isn't all bad news, is it? We're actually rather happy when something difficult changes. If it turned out that the one thing that was certain, lasting and forever was our discomfort, that would be rather unfortunate. But even our discomfort is only temporary. I mean, of course, there's the outside risk that it'll continue as long as our body does, but in the end it's impermanent. It may not be that cheering up. But at some level it might be. But impermanence is also the basis of so much of what we actually appreciate and are touched by in life. It's the basis of feeling that which is, actually sensing that which is beautiful. There's something about beauty that it isn't something fixed. You may, I'm sure, have had occasion to enjoy a sunset. We see the beautiful colours, the images. We think, wow, I could just watch this for days. We feel touched in our heart. But you know, actually if it stayed the same, we'd be saying, this is really nice. Look at those oranges and yellows and a bit of purple. Oranges, yellows, bit of purple. I think I'll have a cup of tea. It's because it's transient that it's actually something that speaks to our heart. It's like flowers, you know? Flowers don't last so long. Some of the desert flowers seem pretty hardy, and I guess they're here a little while. But have you seen sometimes when you go, I don't know if they do this in this country, but in England and many places I travel, when you go for a meal somewhere, in the restaurant, there's these flowers and they look beautiful. And when you look at them, they look just like flowers, but they're not. And there's something about them that you can't see it with your eye, but you almost feel it, that this isn't alive. It doesn't touch me like a flower, but it looks like a flower. It's a piece of plastic. And the difference is that it's fixed in that colour and shape. Sometimes they even put perfume in them to fool you. But mostly we know, because it's like it doesn't have any dead leaves. They haven't figured out. You need to put a dead leaf on. You need to put a curled... But it's perfect. Perfect flower is not so beautiful. Because actually it's not... If it's perfect, it's not alive. And this is beauty. Beauty is like this. It's because change is there. Because this flower is not forever. Because it will wilt and die. I start to wonder, these have been here a while, you know. I didn't think of this before, but maybe they're going to prove me wrong. But I think these are real and they seem to still be here. It's impressive. But probably their time will come. And as we start to pay attention and be more present with our experience, what we also start to notice is that our sensitivity, our receptivity to beauty starts to deepen, starts to open. And sometimes just simple things touch us. Impermanence also is that which reveals to us preciousness. True preciousness is only because things are impermanent. When we really feel how something is precious to us, it's because at some level we know it's not forever. If we thought it was forever, we'd take it for granted, which is unfortunately what we do all too often. We take it for granted. We assume there'll be food tomorrow. So we don't really see how precious it is to have food today. We take our friends, our family, our bodies for granted. We complain about the things that aren't perfect, rather than seeing that this is so precious. And we'll know that when we recognize that it's not forever. When I was not so long ago staying at one of the monasteries in England, there was a little sign under one of the trees. And it was quoting from a haiku, a poem. And underneath it had a name and a date. It said, "The cherry trees blossom for just a few days. Any longer, and we would not treasure them so." And underneath is written, "Little Sammy." It's a boy's name. And a single date. And I find that it was incredibly touching just to read that. That recognition of the preciousness of a life that was just for a day. And you know, in some ways, in the cosmic scheme of things, all of our lives are just a moment in the universe. Do we see how precious it is? Do we feel that? If we see this truly, we stop trying to fix it and make it perfect. Going back to the image of the house. When we moved in with those friends, the second of the two places, it was very interesting. Because we moved into this house, it was the nicest, I never lived in a house so nice. We moved in and we thought, nice house. Our friends moved in and they thought, let's move that wall, let's put a window here, let's do this, let's do that. For us, it was somewhere we were staying that was borrowed. For them, it was my house, and then I'm going to fix it, change it, move it around. When we take this life as ours, we think we have to fix it. We have to make it different or better than it is. This body, this mind, this life. When we see that it's borrowed, actually we just say, "Well, thank you. okay, it's not perfect, but hey, I got one. And we maybe take care of it. We have a sense of responsibility for it. That's different from that ownership that looks to see, what do I have to do to it, to fix it? If we can release ourselves from having to fix it, we may really come to understand more deeply what it is. With this recognition, with this understanding, change, impermanence, that things move on, what it says to us is let go. It says don't hold on to the things that come. And this is important. Because so often when something sweet comes to us, we're so desperately trying to keep it that we actually stop remembering to appreciate it while it's here. We're more worried about whether we can keep it. I was once on a retreat and they served lasagna. It's like one of my favourite things. And I got the serving of lasagna. And I took it to my place and I was eating it thinking, will there be enough for a second helping? Will I get there in time? Will there be enough? Maybe you did the same with one of our wonderful meals we've had here. Will there be enough? Will there be some more? On the first day the rice ran out, maybe there won't be any left. With the lasagna, I took a big piece. By the time I was finished, I was stuffed. I had not tasted the lasagna. I had not enjoyed it. I'd been just worrying about whether there'd be any more. And when I was finished, there was more and I didn't want it. It was tragic. And we do that all the time. You notice? When there's a moment of something sweet, how hard it is to just receive it and how quickly we move to take it. Seeing change says, don't do that. Don't do that. William Blake said, he who binds himself to a joy does the winged life destroy. He who kisses the joy as it flies lives on in eternity's sunrise. When we try to take hold of the sweetness that comes, we destroy the winged life. It's like we take the lightness and the movement, the ability to fly, to move away. But we can just kiss it. It doesn't mean avoid it. It doesn't mean it's not okay to have that experience, to enjoy it, but to allow it to touch it and yet know that it's moving. This is actually a gateway to what Blake calls eternity sunrise. The discovery of something which isn't of the same order as things which come and go. So we're asked, when things come to us that are sweet, to meet them, embrace them perhaps, but let them go when they move on. And when difficult things come to us, so strong is the urge to try and fix it. So strong. But see if you can stay steady with whatever that is. Even if you could fix it, just to see that it'll move on by itself. There's no point fighting and struggling. It will change. It is its nature. It cannot help but do that. And to begin to trust this means we can receive also the difficult and the challenging. Understanding that in some way this is the material through which we grow. And to the extent that we're not willing to meet it, what we're saying is, I'm not willing to grow. That's pretty much what happens when you're dead. If you're not willing to grow, it's just starting early on death. It's a choice. It's not the recommended choice, but it's a choice. And so we say again and again to you, be willing to grow. Be willing to face that edge where you have to stretch and not always think, I have to fix, control, avoid. And in this we are learning what Alan Watts called the wisdom of insecurity. To be at home in a world that moves and changes. To allow what comes and to release that which leaves. Whatever it might be. If and to the degree we can really do this, if we can allow ourselves to settle in to where we are, to receive the experiences that come, to release the experiences that are going, it's like we're standing at the doorway, at the threshold of understanding. Profound understanding. The Buddha, having begun, as I said, his search, seeking for that which was not subject to birth, aging, and death, came through his awakening to realize, as he said, that there is that which is not subject to aging and death, that which is not born and does not die, that which is not moving nor still, not coming nor going, nor fixed. What was he speaking about? What was he pointing to when he said that? Quite a number of years ago now, I was practicing, much as you have all been practicing these days, at a monastery in Asia. And at this place there was a number of puppies and dogs and creatures. The monasteries in Asia are regarded as like sanctuaries for all beings to come that are given some safety, and their life is quite tough for a lot of animals, and so they find their way to the monasteries and the temples. And on this occasion I was practicing walking meditation and just enjoying these little puppies. There was a litter of puppies running around and they seemed just so full of life and joy and excitement, and you know, you're walking slowly and they'd run up and bang into your foot just to see if you're really mindful and keeping your balance, you know, or you'd put your meal down for a moment just to contemplate something or space out perhaps, and they'd whip over and help you with it in case you'd accidentally taken too much and were going to be worried, you know, I've got to eat it all. And I just loved them. And I'd been there the year before and had the same experience. And it was just like, oh, these incredible creatures. And then it struck me, after about a week, I suddenly realized, oh my gosh, I had thought those puppies were the same ones as had been there last year. And I realized, you know, no. Of course, they are not. Those puppies have grown up. Some of them have survived, some of them maybe not. But I was thinking, it's like those puppies are all different. And yet, what came to me really is that those puppies are changing, but puppy nature is unchanging. It's like the spark that animates them, the life that pours through them and out of them, is exactly the same. Exactly the same. And to understand what this means for us. is what our practice invites us to do, to discover. The forms change constantly. And if we battle with that, life is just a struggle. But within and through and around all of that, there is a truth that does not change. And this is what spiritual teachings are concerned with understanding and recognizing the significance of. Read a poem by Red Hawk, a Native American elder, entitled "The Time Will Come When It Is Easier to Die." We have to go deeper inside, like a tired miner chipping through stone. We have to dig even when we have had enough, and it is no longer worth it to get up out of the bed. The morning is cold. The grey clouds move in like a flock of dark crows over a picked field. That is when you have to go deeper, through another hard layer of pain. You have to be relentless to make it in this place, because it will be relentless with you. It will never stop beating and grinding, wearing you down with one more thing gone wrong. Friends will die, or their nerves will fail. Women will cease to be thrilled with you, or men, and your sorry efforts to hold it all together will come to nothing. You'll still tremble in the leg, go grey and dim in the face, leak more every year in your yellowed shorts. Don't be in a hurry to pack it in. The time will come when it is easier to dig than to die. The trick is to find the gold before death finds you, and then to sit there in the heart where you cannot be taken, while death storms and rages all around, stealing everything in sight, and yet left holding only a bag full of bones. It's not a trick. It's something that's right here and now. That we need to understand, to recognize, to see. If we are not to be lost in the struggle with things that come and go. And in order to allow ourselves to really settle, to really come to rest, we have to understand that freedom is born from not fighting with the way things are, not clinging to experience. Impermanence and change reminds us to let go again and again and again. And in that letting go, we find it's only our grasping and our holding on to experience that keeps us on the surface. It's only that that means we don't naturally plunge into the depths of our being. And so, to enter where we are unconditionally, no conditions, no demands, no expectations. In each moment, in every moment, is to stand on the threshold of the open door. That's it. come to understand the truth of change. And to realize that truth which is changeless. May we come to know true peace and freedom in this world. That we may serve the well-being of all that lives. Please continue to practice. This precious opportunity is not forever. And, could the bell ringer please ring the bell at 8:55? We'll have the sitting at 9:00.
ארגון קטן, נותן מיד בחדר האוכל.